I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. California, Montana, New Jersey. Those are a few of the 10 states which allow terminally ill people to end their own lives. Advocates call it right to die, or medical aid in dying, and they insist that it shouldn't be confused with, quote, physician-assisted suicide. That's because the patient, not a doctor, administers the drug. Opponents disagree with that framing. Now, in Springfield, lawmakers introduced a bill in February that would make Illinois the 11th state with a law like this on the books. Its backers are hoping to push it through during the spring session, which is currently underway. Now, in a few minutes, we'll hear why the disability rights group Access Living opposes the legislation and why the ACLU of Illinois supports it. Before we get there, here's our conversation with Illinois State Senator Linda Holmes, one of the bill's co-sponsors. She starts off with a breakdown of what's included in the legislation and what it would do.
It is medical aid in dying. People that are terminally ill and have less than 6 months to live have the option of self-administering a prescription that will end their suffering. We have plenty of guardrails in place because some of the opponents speak of concerns, although I do also want to point out that Oregon has done this since 1997, and there has not been one documented complaint about the process or abuse. One of the key things I like to say about this legislation is I know that the opponents like to call it assisted suicide. This is not suicide. Quite frankly, these are not people that want to die. These are people that are going to die.
You mentioned guardrails that will be put in place in Illinois' version of the bill. Can you elaborate?
Yes. We want to make sure that the person who is terminally ill, they're making an informed decision, and it is totally voluntary. So there's really strict eligibility requirements. As you know, they have to have two doctors say that they have less than 6 months to live. If either doctor has any concerns about their mental capability, a mental health care specialist is required to also talk with them to make sure that this is something that they're able to make an informed decision on this. They're also given mandatory counseling on what the treatment options are at this point. Hospice, palliative care, and you also have to have an independent witness, not somebody that can gain from their death, that is there to witness that this is something they are wanting to do and they are capable of making that decision.
I want to talk specifically about how this measure would work just a bit more. I mean, who exactly is eligible for it, the end of life option?
The end of life option, you have to be an adult 18 or older. You have to have two doctors give you a prognosis of less than 6 months to live. You have to be mentally capable. If either of those two doctors think you are not, there's a mental health care specialist brought in. You have to make the request verbally to your doctor. You also will have to submit a written request done a few days later, so it can't all be done in one day. Those are some of the safeguards to do that. The doctor then prescribes the medication. It's basically a compound that your pharmacist can fill. Mind you, these patients also have to be able to self-administer the medication. And then they can have the medication on hand so that if and when their suffering becomes too great, they can make the choice.
I know that you mentioned two doctors will need to sort of give that prognosis, but I mean, surely there's consideration for the fact that medical projections on how much time a person has to live, that is not always reliable, right? We hear often people told that they have X number of months to live and then they go on to live for years. What are the discussions around that?
The discussions around that are, again, once you get this prescription, nothing compels you to take it. As a matter of fact, 37% of the people that get it never do take it. It's just an option if the suffering becomes unbearable. So in that case, if people are continuing to have a life that they're living their life and they're not suffering unbearably, they don't have to take the prescription.
So we talked about the fact that this medication would be self-administered by this terminally ill person, Senator. what role does the physician play here?
The physician plays the role of prescribing the drug. The patient can then, once they have the drug, I mean, it would be filled by a pharmacy. Once they have the drug, they mix it in a liquid. It can be mixed in water or juice or something, and it's a compound and it dissolves.
Why is it important, do you think, that we make that distinction of who is administering the drug here?
Well, I think that has a little bit, it becomes more of an assisted suicide if the doctor is actually performing injecting the drug. Mm-hmm. And that's the difference. I mean, we know, like, when we put our animals down, obviously it's the veterinarian who is administering the drug.
Right. So prescribing the drug versus injecting a drug, there's a difference there in your eyes?
I think there are. And we're also, again, I want to make it very, very clear that if you are prescribed this drug and if you have it on hand, you do not need to take it. You have the option to not take it until you're ready to take it. And again, it's 37% of the people that have this drug on hand do not take it.
What do you want people to understand about this measure, Senator? Are there any misconceptions that you want to clear up?
Again, it is not people that are wanting to die. It is people that are actively already dying. So it's, again, it's not suicide. Nobody is compelled to do this. No doctor is compelled to prescribe this if they are not comfortable doing that. So it's completely voluntary by both the patient and the doctor. And I know you're going to have some people that are going to tell you that this is the Catholic Church or people with disabilities don't agree with this because they don't want somebody with a disability to just decide that life is just not bearable and they want to take it. You do not qualify. I have MS. I don't qualify because I have MS, because there is no doctor that's going to tell me I have less than 6 months to live. I also want to say that your death certificate will reflect what your illness was. In my mother's case, say she had pancreatic cancer, had she been able to choose this option and done it, her death would not be listed as medical aid in dying. It would be listed as pancreatic cancer, so that you're keeping those records for the family and future generations to know their family medical history. You also are still able to, it doesn't alter what you get insurance-wise.
So do you feel hopeful about this bill passing in Illinois?
I do. And I think the reason this has become much more talked about now is because as all of us baby boomers watched our parents die, it's the lived experience that makes it happen. Mm-hmm. When I saw both my parents who died of cancer, you see people die. It's horrible to lose somebody you love, but there is nothing that is more horrible than watching somebody you love suffer. And that's what we're trying to eliminate, is patients having to suffer when they are going to die.
We'll leave it there. That's Illinois State Senator Linda Holmes of Aurora. Now, she's a co-sponsor of the bill that we're discussing that would allow some terminally ill patients in Illinois to end their own lives. Senator Holmes, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me on.
Now we'll turn to an opponent of this bill. Amber Smock is Vice President of Advocacy for Access Living, a service and advocacy organization for people with disabilities. Access Living does not support this legislation. And I started by asking Amber for the top reason her organization is against the measure.
Introducing a medical aid in dying, or as we also call it, assisted suicide option to Illinois, will create dangerous situations for people with disabilities. And I think that we have to think very carefully that people will say that this is about a personal choice and this is about a right to die. However, the problem is that the way such systems are set up, they often create loopholes that harm people with disabilities. And we have seen that in other states.
You have used certain language, and I've been researching this, and I've noticed mm-hmm. that the language between opponents and supporters differs, right?
Yes.
Opponents often use, as you did a moment ago, assisted suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And supporters use medical aid in dying or the right to die, right?
Right.
What do you think of this framing, Amber?
Well, as a disability advocate, I think that we have to really call it for what it is. It is ending your life is suicide. And people end their lives all the time. We do have a national suicide crisis. Proponents will say that they prefer to use medical aid in dying because the people who their bill is intended to target are people that say they are already dying. The problem is, however, a six-month prognosis from doctors is notoriously inaccurate. Most doctors will tell you that they are certainly not right 100% of the time on prognoses. And so having a six-month prognosis doesn't necessarily mean anything. It may mean that, yes, you're very sick. But it also doesn't mean that you have a timer on you.
And you're bringing up the timeline because as part of the approval process for something like this, your death has to be, you know, reasonably foreseeable.
Right, right, exactly. And we also know that this standard is used because this is what is used in hospice care as well. But it is about making that decision to end your life. And unfortunately, for Access Living, such a decision, the way it is set up, does actually have impact on people beyond you. And so there is collateral damage to introducing something like medical aid in dying to Illinois.
How concerned are you that people with disabilities could be taken advantage of here?
We are very concerned. And again, people will talk about, while we're putting safeguards in the medical aid in dying law, you know, you have to be mentally competent. Let me just say that there are a lot of people with disabilities who are mentally competent. And so having the mental competence requirement does not, in fact, protect people with disabilities. We also know that physician bias against people with disabilities is widespread. Many doctors do not understand or see the quality of life for people with disabilities the way that we see our own quality of life. So the idea that you might not be able to go to the bathroom by yourself or feed yourself or bathe yourself, that's not necessarily a deal breaker for a lot of people with disabilities. What that's about is making sure you get services that you need at the time that you need them. Mm-hmm. But for other people, they see this as a fundamental affront to their personal control over their own life.
You talked about competency. How do you measure competency?
How do you measure competence? Well, according to the proposed law, it is about your doctor deciding whether you have the ability to make your own medical decisions. I'm not a physician, so I can't speak to what exactly a doctor goes through to do that. But I would point out that it's not necessarily required that the doctor in question be a doctor that knows you very well. Your primary care doctor may, in fact, refuse to prescribe the prescription, but that doesn't prevent you from going to another doctor who doesn't really know you and them just making a decision based on a visit with you that you're mentally competent. That doesn't necessarily show them the full frame of what's happening in your everyday life.
To that end, there's a Chicago Tribune editorial opposing this bill, citing a Harvard study. And it says that 82% of the physicians surveyed believe that patients with a disability have a worse quality of life than non-disabled patients. And 41% of those doctors were, quote, very confident that they could provide equal care to patients with and without disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
I think that you should be able to trust your doctor 100% of the time. I think a lot of people with disabilities will tell you that it is very hard to find doctors that really understand their situations. And not just doctors, but insurance companies that do what is necessary to approve required treatments, especially life-saving treatments. We hear stories all the time about doctors recommending life-saving treatments for patients, and then insurance companies deny them. So what we're not really clear about is a doctor may have bias and they may try to steer you, yes, but we also know that a doctor might try to prescribe something life-saving and insurance companies will deny it. Where does that actually leave someone when they're trying to make a decision about what's right for them?
Can you dig more into that? Give us more examples of how bias has impacted people with disabilities when it comes especially to what we're talking about today, end-of-life care.
Yes. So I have a friend named Ingrid who lives in California, and Ingrid is someone with a progressive disability. California is a state that does have a medical aid in dying law. Ingrid went to a doctor after years of treatments for different things related to her disability, and her doctor said, looking good. You know, I know this is really hard, but we've come to the end of the road where the treatments that are available for you. So at this point, there's really not anything more that we can do to make you more comfortable or to assist you with your disability. Have you considered medical aid in dying?
So they suggested it to your friend.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And Ingrid's reaction was, are you telling me that I'm about to die? Are you telling me that it would be just better and cheaper if I'm not here anymore? And so she was already experiencing a lot of depression because of her condition. And so she thought, for a second there, she thought, well, maybe I should do what my doctor says. Maybe I should end it all. But he hadn't given her a six-month prognosis. He didn't give any other reason other than just, I can't help you any further, so this is the last thing I got. She went home and talked with her husband and her family, and they talked her out of using that option. But it's a very good example of how you cannot regulate, you cannot really force doctors to only follow a very specific procedure when they're in the doctor's office. That's what happened with Ingrid. Mm-hmm. So what Ingrid really needed was mental health support. Ingrid needed a therapist, and they didn't offer that.
She needed more options.
Yeah.
Right?
What happens a lot of times for disabled people is rather than being offered mental health support, they're offered options that kind of hurry things along.
Speaking of those options, I mean, you and your colleagues at Access Living, you acknowledge that the state already provides options for end-of-life care.
Yes, they absolutely do. Yes, they do. Advanced directives, for example, you have the right to refuse care. You can designate power of attorney to do whatever you want. There are do not resuscitate orders.
Hospice?
Yes. So there are a lot of ways that you can already control how you want your end-of-life care to go. But I think that there is a very persistent group of people who say, I want to be able to get a pill.
I want to circle back to something you mentioned earlier, right? Because this proposal in Illinois, it's limited to terminally ill people who have 6 months or less to live.
Right.
Another reason your organization doesn't support the bill is because of what you call, quote, diagnostic uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned Correct. This a moment ago.
Correct.
Tell us a bit more.
Sure. So doctors will tell you that they can't always be 100% certain what their prognosis might be for someone that they believe to be terminally ill. They might say you have 2 weeks, you have 3 months, you have 6 months. Like, you do not know for sure. But I think using a prognosis as a clear and established standard isn't very sound.
Some people might be listening to us right now and thinking, well, if this is what a person wants, mm-hmm. who are we to involve ourselves in this decision about their life? How do you respond to that argument?
Yes, of course, people deserve the right to choose to live their lives the way that they want to. What Access Living is saying is that this particular kind of choice has ramifications for other people. By introducing medical aid in dying as a legal option in the state of Illinois, you are setting up a process that can be amended and expanded down the road. What happens across the country is in the states where such a law exists, there have been repeated bills and repeated efforts to expand who can access that law and how quickly they can access that law. What happens when you say, okay, you can deliver a prescription? The next step people are going to ask for is, can my doctor just give me the medication themselves? Doctors are very uncomfortable with this idea. What they're proposing right now in Illinois is something that somebody has to administer to themselves. Okay. But what we are saying is that disabled people live with a legacy, and you have heard this from other communities, we live with a legacy of historic medical experimentation, historic euthanasia, and particularly for disabled people of color, this is a pretty grave concern. Everybody in this situation is well-intentioned, and everybody in this situation has seen people around them suffer and die. I have. But that does not mean that having access to this medication is going to make it okay that you get to end your life while other people get messed up by their insurance companies, their doctors, etc. Is that okay? And that's what everybody has to think about.
We'll leave it there. That is Amber Smock, who's vice president of advocacy with Access Living. Thank you, Amber.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now let's turn to a supporter. Kadeen Bennett is Director of Advocacy and Intergovernmental Affairs with the ACLU of Illinois. Here's Kadeen.
Yeah, I mean, I think the ACLU of Illinois, we care about all people, including people living with disabilities and their ability to exercise bodily autonomy. And we believe that all terminally ill adults have the right to decide for themselves whether or not they would want to take advantage of an option like medical aid in dying. And I think as it relates to folks living with disabilities, we also trust them to decide for themselves what they want to do. And Senator Holmes said earlier, it is another option available for folks who are at the end of their lives. So there's palliative care, hospice care, comfort care, pain control, and now medical aid in dying would be one of those other options that's available. And in working on this issue for over 10 years while at the ACLU, I've heard from people who are terminal, who have had loved ones who are terminal, and they want to be able to exercise this option here in Illinois. I think about Andrew, who his mom is now an advocate, who was from Illinois, ended up moving to California, was found to be terminal, really wanted to come back to Illinois and to be able to be with his family. And he wasn't able to because of our law. And towards the end of his life, he did a lot of advocacy because, you know, he had the privilege of having his family have the resources to fly to California to be with him at the end. But for many other people in Illinois, that's not an option that's available. So I hear the concerns that Amber raised. We do agree that folks living with disabilities don't always have, all of their needs met by our healthcare system. But we're talking about a situation where we would never want to be in a scenario where we say medical aid in dying for everyone except for terminal people living with disabilities. We want to make sure that option is available to them because we know in other states, some of the concerns that she's raised haven't played out in that way. And it is an important choice for folks who are dealing with their end of life and want to make that choice for them.
You mentioned Senator Holmes there, Kadeen. Something else the senator brought up was the fact that these terminally ill patients would need to get the prognosis of two doctors. We know famously that medical projections on how much time someone has to live, that's not always accurate. So how do you respond to that? I mean, is two doctors enough?
We believe that it is, and you're right, it is not a 100% science, but the language in our bill talks about a reasonable prognosis that they have 6 months or less to live. And while Amber gave examples of folks who may be on the longer side, there are also folks who are given 6 months and they have less than 6 months. So in all, there has to be a threshold period. Doctors have to make these determinations often, even when people are seeking treatment. If you have a cancer diagnosis and you're getting treatment, there are these prognoses that medical professionals have to make. And we do think that this is a right standard to have in the law.
What are you actually hearing from terminally ill folks about the legislation? Do they want this option or something like it?
So Deb Robinson is one example of a terminal ill person living in Illinois who really, really wants it. Deb is at the end of her life, and she's hoping that this can be available to her before she dies. And for folks who are terminal, this is something that they want to be able to have that option. And for some people, they go through the process, they get the medication, and they may never use it, but it is a good to know that this option is available. And then there are some people who choose to use it. So all in all, we've heard really positive feedback about this bill being introduced, folks really wanting the ability to have this option in Illinois. And just a reminder to folks that nobody has to use this option. This is something for people who make that choice for themselves, that they're not coerced to do it, that this is the option that they choose. And we believe that we should respect their right to do that.
The senator also mentioned guardrails and no reports of abuse of this end-of-life option in other states that are already doing this. How would we know about any abuse, though? I mean, is that reported?
So there is reporting of who is using medical aid in dying, and we've seen stats from other states as well. There is, we have language in the bill around civil and criminal liability if somebody is forcing or coercing somebody to either use or not use this medication. We have language that makes it unlawful for an insurer to deny or alter healthcare benefits that would have been available to a patient with terminal with a terminal illness just based on the availability of aid in dying. So we have guardrails in place, and we've also been in conversation with folks like Access Living, asking if there are other things that you want to see in the law. We're open to including those provisions as well.
What do you know about this medication, Kadeen? What is it?
So as Senator Holmes stated, it's a five-drug compound that prescribed by a pharmacist and dispensed, and the person is able to ingest this medication, and it puts them to sleep, and they die in their sleep. A doctor has to prescribe it. It only goes to the patient, and the patient has to ingest it.
I want to ask you a similar question that I asked Amber Smock from Access Living. There's a difference between the language that opponents and supporters are using, right? What do you think of the framing of MAID as assisted suicide? Why is it not suicide in your eyes?
I think I'd actually use what I've heard Deb talk about when, and Deb, as I mentioned, is somebody who is terminal and an advocate on this issue, where she bristles at the idea that it's suicide. She is going to die. This is aid in dying in terms of allowing for her to transition in a peaceful manner, in the same way that, pain control, hospice care, palliative care, these are all places, all tools that are used to help somebody who is going to transition into death. And the idea that someone is committing suicide, has a lot of negative connotations. And these are folks, all of them want to live if that was an option available to them, but they know that they're going to die. And I think it's just a respectful frame to acknowledge that it is a medical aid in dying as opposed to assisted suicide.
Leave us with this, Kadeen. What is the status of the bill right now? What's next?
So the bill is in the Senate. It's in subcommittee in the Senate, and we are continuing to work our roll call. And as soon as our first availability to call the bill, we will be calling the bill. So it's Springfield. If you say you know what's going to happen and what day it's happened, then you're wrong. So I would just say that as soon as we have the votes and the ability to call it, we will. And I will also say that in working on this issue for so many years, it used to be I wonder when this is going to happen. And I think it's now in a place of when this happens, because we believe that it's going to happen soon in Illinois. And I know that there are lots of folks who are terminal or who've lost loved ones who are terminal. We're really excited to have this option available for those who want to exercise this option.
That's Kadeen Bennett from the ACLU. We've been discussing a bill that could make Illinois the 11th state to allow some terminally ill patients to self-administer a drug to end their life. Thank you so much, Kadeen.
Thank you so much for having me.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was edited by Dan Tucker, produced and mixed by Micah Yasin, with help from Max Lubers. If you like what you're hearing, check out our daily newsletter. You can subscribe at wbez.org/resetnews. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Let's talk again soon.